What do you feel was lacking in the Duncan Olson poetic that you refer to as a very male poetic?
In Olson's case, it was clearer, because Duncan, being gay, was already in critique with a lot of contemporary society. In Olson's case, I think that the whole figure of Maximus was a very male figure. And there was a kind of... I became very, very jaundiced about the whole notion of heroism. And I think there are still traces of the heroic in Olson. So that kind of put me off. I didn't know how to situate myself as a woman in his worldview.
Unless you're going to be, you know, an Annie Oakley or these women who perhaps got fame by emulating masculine attributes, right?
Right, right, yeah.
And that heroic is, to me, a very European, you know, Eurocentric kind of the man is going to come and the prince is going to come and save the
world.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's interesting because the Tisch movement, you and George Bowring and Fred Waugh and the others associated with the movement, got a lot of grief here in Canada.
We did.
For, you know, here you're taking from these American writers, and yet these American, and George has talked about this in an interview with me and other places, but, you know, Olson and Duncan are telling you to make it local. And,
that's right.
And then you mentioned the word proprioception, which makes it even as local as it can get, I guess, with a person. And that is being in touch with how your body feels in space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take proprioception for granted until we lose it. And then it's like, holy shit, what's happening to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you talk a little bit about that, the notion of proprioception and how that's inspired you and become one of your sources, you might say?
Well, there's a strong notion of the body in relation to all that surrounds it, from the large-scale mountains to the small-scale, that Junko traveling on the railing behind you.
Rosie Junko?
Not Rosie. No. Those are the ones with the black little heads, the black...
It was the finch was...
The finch was up there on the feeder earlier, yeah.
Right.
The Rosie Finch.
Rosie Finch,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. There's the Junko. Very busy. They're very busy little birds. So that sense of registering not only visually what's outside of oneself, but tactilely, as you mentioned, spatially, the body in space, the body in movement, in locomotion, how it negotiates distance and closeness, and registering that inside, like being aware of that inside, I think was important for my sense of ecology, actually. I think that's what led me to a more ecological sense of the environment, and I find myself pretty concerned with that these days because it's under such great threat.
Under siege.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The connection between your own body and and Mother Earth, might say.
Yeah, I have a jaundiced view of Mother Earth too, because that tends to situate women in relation to Mother Earth. We're all supposed to be these maternal, motherly types,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very tiny role for a woman to occupy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. It's interesting because there's a reference to Dogen in Liquidities, and it's about the mountain walking. Yeah,
that's so, right.
So this is a proprioception that is, I'll say, recognized in the natural world, and being able to relate to the proprioception in things that conventional wisdom would consider inanimate.
Absolutely, and of course that's also, it's also very Buddhist, and it's also very much part of First Nations cosmology. And Dogen is one of my favorite writers. I think he always makes me sit up and look in very different ways at what's around. But of course, the whole Buddhist notion of impermanence, of constant transition and change, is very crucial here, because we get stuck in wanting this permanence, this security, this sense of a unchangeable self and unchangeable selves in the world around us, which gets us into a huge amount of trouble.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the Donovan lyric, first there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is, right?
Right.
Well, before we drop Duncan and Olson and Creeley and Levertov and Allen Ginsberg, all the faculty at the Vancouver Poetry Conference, tell us more about your impressions of some of the other folks. They're specifically, I think I remember this from the movie, Allen Ginsberg meeting students in the bushes. This was his office.
Well, it wasn't really in the bushes. It was a hedge, and he was sitting on the grass behind the hedge.
Well,
one of the,
you know, I don't want to infer what people would immediately associate.
I know, I know, exactly.
Right.
No, actually, you know, before that conference, I'll give in, I'll call it a conference, began, Ginsberg was someone whose work I was very, very interested in. I'd been reading him, and I liked the spirituality, the open spirituality in his work, and the critique of what was going down in society, too. I was also, with Ginsberg, it's so upfront. It's right there all the time. I was very young then, you know. Like, I was still in my, what was I? I would have been 1963. I would have been 20, just turned 21. So I was having more trouble connecting with Charles Olson's work at that point. It seemed more abstract to me. And, of course, I didn't know many of the sources that he was calling on for his work. So Ginsberg, I was really interested in the dynamics that were going on, that was there when they were all together on their panel discussions, and how Ginsberg would get so fed up sometimes. And at that point, especially in the smaller seminar groups we had, I began to get a different sense of language. That's what that conference gave me, a much more vivid sense of language and how language works. And that was, a lot of that was through what Olson was saying about etymology, which I'd never really looked at before. In fact, I took a linguistics course the next year as a result of that. And just that sense of the immediacy of the mind moving through language from verbal, linguistic, melodic, so semantic, melodic, and historical, sense of the history, I began to realize how much roots are still, they're like the unconscious of the language. We still feel those early meanings, even though we don't use them anymore. And that, together with meeting up with a young poet in Bloomington, Indiana, who was a linguist, D. Alexander, we had a lot of conversations about language. All of that was part of, interestingly enough, part of what proprioception began to mean to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can say more about that at this point.